Chapter 13. What Must Be Done. The army split before Egwene as she rode forward toward the hills in southeastern Kandor, where they would shortly engage the advancing enemy. She led over 100 Aes Sedai, many of them from the Green Aja. Bryn's tactical revisions had been quick and efficient. He had something better than archers for breaking a charge, something more destructive than heavy cavalry for causing sheer damage. It was time to use it. Two other smaller forces of Aes Sedai made their way to the flanks of the army. These hills might once have been lush and green. Now they were yellow and brown, as if burned by sunlight. She tried to see the advantages. At least they would have sure footing. And though the sky broke with periodic lightning, rain seemed unlikely. The approaching Trolloc seemed to extend forever in either direction. Though Egwene's army was enormous, it suddenly felt tiny. Fortunately, Egwene had a single advantage. The Trolloc army was driven by a need to continue moving forward. Trolloc armies fell apart if they were not constantly advancing. They'd start bickering. They'd run out of food. Egwene's army was a barrier in their way, and bait. The Shadow Spawn couldn't afford to leave such a force as theirs at large, and so Egwene would draw them along a course she determined. Her Aes Sedai reached the battlefront. Bryn had split his army into large, highly mobile strike units to hit the Trollocs wherever and whenever they showed vulnerability. The offensive structure of Bryn's forces seemed to confuse the Trollocs. At least, that was how Egwene read the shuffling in their ranks, the churning movement, the increase of noise. Trollocs rarely had to worry about being on the defensive. Trollocs attacked, humans defended, humans worried, humans were food. Egwene reached the top of a low hill, looking out at the plain in Kandor where the Trollocs amassed, her Aes Sedai arraying in a long line to either side of her. Behind them, the men of the army seemed uncertain. They knew Egwene and the others were Aes Sedai, and no man was comfortable around Aes Sedai. Egwene reached to her side and slipped something long, white, and slender from the leather case tied to her belt. A fluted rod. Vora's Sa'angreal. It felt comfortable in her hand. Familiar. Though she had only used this Sa'angreal once, she felt as if it had claimed her and she it. During the fight against the Shanshan, this had been her weapon. For the first time, she understood why a soldier might feel a bond with his sword. The glow of the power winked on around the women in the line, like a row of lanterns being lit. Egwene embraced the source and felt the one power flow into her like a waterfall, filling her and opening her eyes. The world became sweeter, the scents of oil from armor and of beaten grass growing stronger. Within the embrace of Sayadar, she could see the signs of color that the shadow wanted them to ignore. The grass wasn't all dead. There were tiny hints of green, slivers where the grass clung to life. There were voles beneath it. She could now easily make out the ripples in the earth. They ate at the dying roots and clung to life. Smiling widely, she pulled the one power through the fluted rod. Within that torrent she was atop a sea of strength and energy, riding a lone vessel and embracing the wind. The Trollocs finally surged into motion. They roared, a huge rush of weapons, teeth, stink, and eyes that were too human. Perhaps the Murdral had seen Aes Sedai up front and thought to attack and destroy the human channelers. The other women waited for Egwene's sign. They were not in a circle. A circle was best for one focused, precise stream of the one power. That wasn't the goal today. The goal today was simply to destroy. Once the Trollocs were halfway to the hills, Egwene began her offensive. She'd always been unusually strong in earth, so she led with the most simple and destructive of weaves. She sent threads of earth into the ground beneath the Trollocs in a long line, then heaved it up. With the aid of Vora's Sangreal, it felt as easy as tossing a handful of pebbles into the air. At this sign, the entire line of women formed weaves. The air rippled with glowing threads, pure streams of fire, of earth to heave, of gusts of wind to blow the Trollocs into one another and make them trip and tumble. The Trollocs that Egwene had thrown into the air toppled back to the ground, many of them missing legs or feet. Bones broke, and Trollocs screamed in agony as their fellows fell upon them. Egwene let the second rank stumble across the fallen, then struck again. This time she didn't focus on the earth, but on metal. Metal in armor, in weapons, and on wrists. She shattered axes and swords, mail and the occasional breastplate. This released fragments of metal with deadly speed. The air grew red with spraying blood. The next ranks tried to stop to avoid the shrapnel, but the Trollocs behind them had too much momentum. They shoved their fellows forward into the zone of death and trampled them. Egwene also killed the next wave with exploding metal. It was harder than casting up the earth, but it also didn't give as much sign to the back ranks, so she was able to continue killing without them realizing what they were doing by shoving their fellows forward. Then Egwene returned to rupturing the earth. There was something energizing about using raw power, sending weaves in their most basic forms. In that moment, maiming, destroying, bringing death upon the enemy, she felt as if she were one with the land itself, that she was doing the work it had longed for someone to do for so long. The blight and the shadow spawn it grew were a disease, an infection. Egwene, a fire with the one power, a blazing beacon of death and judgment, was the cauterizing flame that would bring healing to the land. The Trollocs tried hard to push through the Aes Sedai weaves, but that only put more and more of them into the White Tower's reach. The Greens lived up to their Aja's reputation, releasing wave after wave of destruction at the Trollocs, but the other Ajas did well also. The ground trembled, and the air clogged with the howls of the dying. Bodies ripped, flesh burned. Not a few of the soldiers in the front lines emptied their stomachs at the sight. And still the Aes Sedai pounded the Trolloc lines. Specific sisters sought out Myrdral, as they had been ordered. Egwene struck one herself, ripping its eyeless head from its neck with a weave of fire and air. Each fade they killed dropped fists of Trollocs linked to them. Egwene doubled her attack. She hit a rank with a wave of exploding earth, then slammed a wave of air into the bodies as they fell, pushing them back so they dropped onto the ranks behind. She ripped holes in the earth and made the stones and the ground explode. She butchered Trollocs for what seemed like hours. Finally, the shadow spawn broke, the Trollocs pulling back despite the whips of the Myrdral. Egwene took a deep breath. She was starting to feel limp, and struck down more fades. Finally, they too broke and fled back away from the hills. Egwene sagged in her saddle, lowering her Sangreal. She wasn't sure exactly how much time had passed. The soldiers nearby stared, wide-eyed. Their blood had not been required this day.
"That was impressive,"
Gawain said, pulling his horse up beside hers.
"It was as if they were assaulting city walls, trying to run ladders to a siege, only without the walls or the ladders."
"They'll return," Egwene said tiredly. "We killed just a small percentage of them. On the morrow, or the day after at the latest, they would try again. New tactics, perhaps. They might spread out waves of attackers to make it more difficult for the Aes Sedai to kill large batches of them at once." "We surprised them," Egwene said. "They will come stronger next time. For now, for this night, we've held."
"You didn't just hold, Egwene," Gawain said with a smile. "You sent them running. I don't know that I've ever seen an army so thoroughly trounced." The rest of the army seemed to agree with Gawain's assessment, for they began to cheer, raising weapons. Egwene forced back her fatigue and tucked away the fluted rod. Nearby, other Aes Sedai lowered small statues, bracelets, brooches, rings, and rods. They had emptied the White Tower's storehouse of every Angreal and Sa-Angreal, the few of those they had, and distributed them among the sisters on the battlefront. At the end of each day, they would be collected and delivered to the women providing healing. The Aes Sedai turned and rode back through the cheering army. The time for sorrows would unfortunately come. The Aes Sedai could not fight each battle. For now, however, Egwene was content to let the soldiers enjoy their victory. For it was the very best kind, the kind that left no holes in their ranks.
The Lord Dragon and his scouts have begun to reconnoiter Sheol Ghul.
Bashir pointed to one of the shaded maps.
Our resistance in Kandor and Shinar is forcing the Shadow to commit more and more troops to those fights. Soon the blasted lands will be mostly empty, save for a skeleton force of defenders. He will be able to strike more easily then.
Elaine nodded. She could feel Rand somewhere in the back of her mind. He was worried about something, though he was too distant for her to feel more than that. He occasionally visited her at her camp in the Brame Wood, but for now he was on one of the other battlefronts. Bashir continued.
The Ammerlin should be able to hold in Kandor, considering the number of channelers she has. I'm not worried about her.
But you are about the Borderlanders, Elaine said.
Yes. They've been pushed out of Tarwyn's Gap.
I wish they had been able to hold where they were, but they've been overwhelmed. There is nothing to be done for it, save siphon to them what aid we can. Bashir nodded.
Perhaps Lord Mandragoran could reverse his retreat if he had more Aes Sedai or Ashaman.
Of which there were none to spare. She had sent him some Aes Sedai from Egwene's army to help him with his initial retreat, and that had helped. But if Rand himself couldn't fight off the Dreadlords there... Lord Aglmar will know what to do, Elaine said. The Light willing, he'll be able to pull the Trollocs away from more populated areas.
Bashir grunted. A retreat like this, almost a rout, usually affords no chance for directing the course of battle.
Bashir pointed toward the map of Shinar. Elaine studied it. The path of the Trollocs would not avoid inhabited land, Faldara, Mos Shirare, Fal Moran, and with Dreadlords, city walls would be useless. Send word to Lan and the lords of Shinar, she said quietly. Order Faldara and Angkor Dail burned, along with Fal Moran and villages like Mado. They're already burning what farmland they can, emptying the cities as well. Evacuate the civilians to Tar Valon.
I'm sorry,
Bashir said softly. It is what must be done, isn't it?
Yes,
Bashir said. Light, what a mess. Well, what did you expect? Neatness and simplicity? Footsteps on the leaves announced Talmanis approaching with one of his commanders. The Kyrianin looked tired. Everyone did. A week of battle was only the beginning, but the thrill of the fight was dying. Now came the real work of the war. Days fighting or waiting to fight, nights spent sleeping with sword in hand. Elaine's current location in the wood, she'd begun the morning 1,000 paces further south, but their constant retreat through the forest kept her moving, was ideal. 3 small streams with easy access, room for plenty of troops to camp, trees atop the hill that worked as well as watchtowers. A pity they'd have to leave this site behind in the morning.
The Trollocs control the entire southern section of the forest, Bashir said,
knuckling his mustaches.
They are avoiding the clearings. That means our cavalry won't be able to operate efficiently. The dragons are practically useless in here, Your Majesty,
Talmanis said, entering the tent. Now that the Trollocs are keeping off the roadways, we have trouble doing any damage. It's nearly impossible to maneuver the dragon carts in the forest, and when we do get a shot, we kill more trees than we do shadow spawn. What if that, whatever it was that Aludra was talking about?
Her dragon teeth? Talmanis said.
It's better. The dragon shoots out a bunch of bits of metal rather than one ball. It has a big spread to it, and works reasonably well inside the forest. But I maintain that the dragons are doing less damage than it is worth risking them to achieve.
I think that the forest has done us the good it can, Bashir said, moving some Trolloc tokens on their maps. We have whittled down their numbers, but they're getting smart, keeping to the thick woods and trying to surround us.
Suggestions?
Pull back, Bashir said. Head out to the east of here. Make for the Arinin? There's no bridge this far north, Talmanis said.
Bashir nodded.
So you know what I'm going to ask. You have a company of men who can build bridges. Send them with some of your dragons for protection and have them build raft bridges directly east of us. The rest of us won't be far behind. The open terrain there will give our cavalry and the dragons the chance to do more damage. We can rely on the Arinin to slow the Trollocs, especially once we torch the bridges. A few dragons placed there should slow their progress. We'll continue east to the Alguenya and repeat the process. Then we'll be on the road to Cairhien. We'll head north, and when we find a suitable place to make a stand, I think I know just the spot, we'll turn and face the shadow with Cairhien at our backs.
Surely you don't think we'll need to go all that way? Elaine said. Bashir stared at the map, squinting, as if seeing through the parchment itself to the land it depicted.
We're stirring this battle, he said softly, but we don't control it. We're riding it, as a man might ride a stampeding horse. I can't say where the gallop will stop. I'll divert it. I'll send it through patches of thorns, but I can't stop it. Not so long as the Trollocs keep coming.
Elaine frowned. She couldn't afford an endless retreat. She needed to defeat these shadow spawn as soon and as thoroughly as possible, so she could join the remainder of her forces to Lan's and Egwene's armies to beat back the invasions from the north. That was the only way they'd win. Otherwise, it wouldn't matter what Rand was able to do against the Dark One. Light. What a mess. Do it.
Perrin rested his hammer on his shoulder, listening as the sweating young messenger relayed Elaine's orders. A gentle breeze blew through the branches of the forest behind. The Ogier fought in there. He'd worried they would refuse to endanger the trees. But they're fighting? Light. Perrin had never seen savagery to rival it.
These tactics aren't bad, Tam said, reading the orders. The Queen has a good head for warfare.
Perrin waved away the messenger boy. He passed Galad and several of his white cloak commanders, conferring nearby.
She listens well to those who know their tactics, Perrin said, and she doesn't interfere. That's what I meant, lad, Tam said with a smile. Being in charge isn't always about telling people what to do. Sometimes it's about knowing when to step out of the way of people who know what they're doing. Wise words, Tam, Perrin said, turning northward. I suggest you adopt them, as you have command now.
Perrin could see Rand. The colors swam. Rand, speaking with Moraine on a bleak rocky ridge he did not recognize. They were almost ready for the invasion of Shael Ghul. Perrin felt a tug from Rand, growing stronger. Soon Rand would need him.
Perrin? Tam asked. What's this nonsense about command?
You have our forces, Tam, Perrin said. The men are working together now. Let Arganda, Galen, and Galad assist you.
Nearby, Grady held an open gateway through which the wounded from the most recent skirmish were being sent for healing. Barilane ran the hospital on the other side, which the Yellow Aja had placed in Mayenne. The air coming from the other side was warm.
"I don't know if they'll listen to me, Perrin," Tam said. "I'm just a common farmer."
"They listened to you well enough before."
"That was when we were traveling the wilderness," Tam said. "You were always nearby. They answered to me on your authority."
He rubbed his chin.
"I have a feeling, from the way you keep looking north, that you don't intend to be here much longer."
"Rand needs me," Perrin said softly.
"Burn me, Tam, I hate it. But I can't fight along with you here in Andor. Someone needs to watch Rand's back, and it... well, it's going to be me. I know it somehow."
Tam nodded.
"We'll just go to Arganda or Galen and tell them they're in charge of our men. Queen Elaine is giving most of the orders anyway, and..."
"Men!"
Perrin yelled, looking toward the assembled soldiers. Arganda was consulting with Galen. They turned to Perrin, as did the nearby members of the Wolf Guard, along with Galad and his white cloaks. Young Bornhold regarded Perrin through dark eyes. That one grew more and more unpredictable lately. The lights and Galad had been able to keep him from the brandy.
"You all accept my authority, as granted by the Crown of Andor?" Perrin asked.
"Of course, Lord Golden Eyes," Arganda called. "I thought that was established."
"I'm hereby making Tam Al-Thor a lord," Perrin called. "I'm making him steward over the two rivers in the name of his son, the Dragon Reborn. He carries all of my authority, which is the dragon's own authority. If I do not survive this battle, Tam succeeds me."
The camp grew still, then the men nodded, several saluting Tam. Tam groaned so softly, Perrin doubted anyone else could hear.
"Is it too late to turn you over to the women's circle for a good talking to?" Tam asked. "Maybe a sound swat on the behind, and a week spent carrying water for Widow Althorn?"
"Sorry, Tam," Perrin said.
"Niald, try making a gateway to the Black Tower."
The young Ashaman adopted a look of concentration.
"It still doesn't work, Lord Golden Eyes."
Perrin shook his head. He'd heard the reports from Land's battlefront that members of the Black Tower were fighting for the Shadow. Something had happened there. Something terrible.
"All right. Back to Marilor, then," Perrin said.
Niald nodded, concentrating. As he worked, Perrin turned to the men.
"I hate to leave you, but I have these hooks in me, pulling me north. I have to go to Rand. And there's just no arguing with it. I'll try to come back. If I can't, well, I want you all to know that I'm proud of you, all of you. You're welcome in my home when this is over. We'll open a cask or two of Master Elvire's best brandy. We'll remember those who fell, and we'll tell our children how we stood when the clouds turned black and the world seemed to die. We'll tell them we stood shoulder to shoulder, and there was just no space for the Shadow to squeeze through."
He raised Mahalaneer toward them, and he bore their cheering. Not because he deserved it, but because they certainly did. Niald opened the gateway. Perrin started toward it, then hesitated as his name was called. He frowned, looking at Dane Bornhold, as the man hurried over. Perrin rested his hand on his hammer, wary. This man had saved his life against the Trollocs and against a fellow White Cloak. But Perrin saw the dislike the man had for him. He might not blame Perrin for the death of his father, but that didn't mean he liked or even accepted Perrin.
"A word, Ebarra,"
Bornhold said, looking toward Gaul standing nearby.
"In private?"
Perrin waved Gaul away, and the Aiel reluctantly retreated. He stepped with Bornhold away from the open gateway.
"What is this about? If it's because of your father..."
"Light, just be quiet,"
Bornholt said, glancing away.
I don't want to say this. I hate saying this. But you need to know. Light Burnmer, you need to know.
Know what?
Ibarra,
Bornholt said, taking a deep breath.
It wasn't Trollocs who killed your family.
A shock went through Perrin's body.
I'm sorry,
Bornholt said, looking away.
It was Ordeath. Your father insulted him. He tore apart the family, and we blamed the Trollocs. I didn't kill them, but I didn't say anything. So much blood.
What?
Perrin grabbed the white cloak by the shoulder.
But they said, I mean...
Light, he'd dealt with this already.
The look in Bornhold's eyes when his met Perrin's dredged it all up again. The pain, the horror, the loss, the fury. Bornhold reached up and took Perrin's wrist, then yanked it free of his shoulder.
This is an awful time to tell you this, I know,
Bornhold said.
But I couldn't keep it in. I just... We may fall. Light, it might all fall. I had to speak. Say it.
He pulled away, moving back toward the other white cloaks with eyes downcast. Perrin stood alone, his entire world shaking. Then he pulled it back together. He had dealt with this. He had mourned his family. It was over. Through. He could and would go on. Light. The old hurts returned, but he shoved them down and turned his eyes toward the gateway, toward Rand and his duty. He had work to do. But Ordeath, Padon Fain, this only added to that man's terrible crimes. Perrin would see that he paid, one way or another. He approached the gateway to travel to find Rand, where he was joined by Gaul.
I'm going to a place you cannot, my friend, Perrin said softly, his pain subsiding. I'm sorry.
You'll go to the dream within a dream, Gaul said, then yawned.
Turns out I'm tired.
But
I'm coming, Perrin Ibarra. Kill me if you wish me to remain behind.
Perrin didn't dare push him on it. He nodded. Perrin glanced behind him, raising his hammer once more. As he did so, he caught a glimpse through the other gateway, the one to Mayenne that Grady still held open. Inside, two white-robed forms watched Gaul. He raised a spear to them. How must it feel for a pair of warriors to wait out this, the last battle? Perhaps Rand should have tried to have the Gaishine released from their vows for a few weeks. Well, that probably would have turned every single Aiel against him. Like protect the wetlander who dared tamper with Chieto. Perrin ducked through the gateway, stepping onto the ground of Marilor. From there, he and Gaul packed as if for a long trip. Foodstuffs and water aplenty, as much as they dared carry. It took Perrin the better part of a half hour to convince Ran Zashimon to tell him where their leader had gone. Finally, a grudging naif opened a gateway for Perrin. He left Marilor and stepped out into what seemed to be the Blight. Only the rocks were cold. The air smelled of death, of desolation. The fetor took Perrin aback, and it was minutes before he could sort out normal scents from the stench. Rand stood just ahead, at the edge of a ridge, arms folded behind his back. A group of his advisors, commanders and guards, stood behind, including Moiraine, Avienda, and Cadswain. At this moment, though, Rand stood alone at the edge of the ridge. Distant, in front of them, rose the peak of Sheol Ghul. Perrin felt a shiver. It was distant, but Perrin could not mistake the intense determination in Rand's expression as he regarded the peak.
Light, Perrin said. Is it time?
No, Rand said softly. This is a test, to see if he senses me.
Perrin? Nynaeve asked from the hillside behind. She had been speaking with Moiraine, and for once she didn't smell a twinge hateful. Something had happened between those two women.
I only need him for a moment, Perrin said, walking up to join Rand at the end of the outcropping of rock. There were some Aiel back there, and Perrin didn't want them, particularly any wise ones, to hear what he was going to ask Rand.
You have this moment and many, Perrin, Rand said. I owe you dearly. What is it you want?
Well, Perrin looked over his shoulder. Would Moraine or Nynaeve know enough to try to stop him? Probably. Women were always trying to keep a man from doing what he must, as if worried he'd break his neck. Never mind that it was the last battle.
Perrin? Rand asked.
Rand, I need to enter the wolf dream.
Talionriad? Rand said.
Perrin, I don't know what you do there. You've told me little. I figured that you would know how to...
I know how to enter it one way, Perrin said, whispering so that the wise ones and the others behind couldn't hear.
The easy way. I need something else. You know things. You remember things. Is there anything in that ancient brain of yours that remembers how to enter into the world of dreams in the flesh?
Rand grew solemn.
It's a dangerous thing, you ask. As dangerous as going to do what you're about to do?
Perhaps. Rand frowned.
If I'd known back when I... Well, let's just say that some would call your request very, very evil.
It's not evil, Rand, Perrin said. I know something evil when I smell it. This isn't evil. It's just incredibly stupid.
Rand smiled.
And still, you ask?
The good options are gone, Rand. Better to do something desperate than do nothing at all.
Rand didn't reply.
Look, Perrin said. We've spoken of the Black Tower. I know you're worried about it.
I need to go there, Rand said, expression darkening. And yet it's obviously a trap.
I think I know part of what is to blame, Perrin said. There's someone I need to face, and I can't beat him without being able to face him on equal terms. There, in the dream.
Rand nodded slowly.
The wheel weaves as the wheel wills. We will have to leave the blasted lands. You cannot enter the dream from...
He trailed off, then did something, crafting a weave. A gateway opened beside him. Something about it was different from ordinary ones.
I see, Rand said. The worlds are drawing together, compressing. What was once separate is no longer so. This gateway will take you into the dream. Take care, Perrin. If you die in that place while in the flesh, it can have ramifications. What you face could be worse than death itself, particularly now, at this time.
I know, Perrin said.
I will need a way out. Can you have one of your Ashaman make one of these gateways once a day at dawn? Say, at the traveling grounds of Merilor?
Dangerous, Rand whispered, but I will do it. Perrin nodded in thanks.
The light willing, we will see one another again, Rand said.
He held out his hand to Perrin.
Watch out for Matt. I'm honestly not sure what he's going to do, but I have a feeling it will be highly dangerous for all involved.
Not like us, Perrin said, clasping Rand's forearm.
You and I, we're much better at keeping to the safe paths.
Rand smiled.
May the light shelter you, Perrin Ebarra.
And you, Randall Thor. Perrin hesitated and realized what was happening. They were saying goodbye. He took Rand in an embrace.
You take care of him, you two,
Perrin said, looking toward Nynaeve and Moraine as he pulled back from the embrace.
You hear me?
Oh, now you want me to watch over Rand?
Nynaeve said, hands on her hips.
I don't believe I ever stopped, Perrin Ebarra. Don't think I didn't hear you two whispering over there.
You're doing something foolish, aren't you?
Always, Perrin said, raising a hand in farewell to Tom.
Gaul, you certain you want to do this?
I am, the Aielman said, loosening his spears and looking through Rand's gateway. Without another word, the two hefted their heavy packs and stepped into the world of dreams.